GHRT Rewinds are brought to you by Laughlin and Wolfington Realty. Mike and Nate and Harrison teaming up to help you sell your home faster and for top dollar. This is the George Hill Rick Tyler Show. We've carried over our WVOMFM.com question of the day from yesterday to today for a couple of reasons. First, there was a technical issue and listeners couldn't vote. We only got four votes yesterday on the question of the day, okay? We've carried it over. I've done my best to fix the technical issue, but also we carried it over because we wanted to invite our friend David Trahan of the Sportsman's Alliance of Maine. Thanks for getting our text message yesterday, David. Thanks for joining us this morning. We're guessing you saw, well, you were quoted in the item in the Portland Press Herald, Maine Sunday Telegram, about the question, should hunters be required to get permission from landowners? We got an earful from both sides yesterday, and we wanted to hear from you. Thanks for getting up and picking up the phone this morning, David. How are you?
Good morning, and thanks for inviting me. I tell you, I've got a head cold, so if I sound a little hoarse and lose my voice during this discussion, I do apologize, but I'll try to compose myself. So,
well, we won't try to fire you up too much here.
So. Don't worry about that. That always happens.
Many things change in Maine through the years. There are 2,000 bills in the legislature every year. Some of them get passed. We just had about 500 new laws take effect. But one thing that rarely changes is hunting laws. We have had some law changes over the last decades, but one thing has been pretty constant, and that is a Mainer's ability to hunt on private land. There are very few changes to that. I guess the question then comes to you, should there be a change?
Well, first of all, George, 99% of the time we agree, and on this one I don't quite agree with you, I'll explain why. There have been some very significant law changes over the years to address particularly safety during hunting and on other people's property. And some of those laws include the mandatory target identification law, which I think was one of the more important laws ever passed. And that is, you have to know what you're shooting before you pull the trigger. And if you don't, you're liable. Another one was mandatory hunter orange. For many years, a lot of the injuries that occurred hunting were during family deer drives where one hunter would shoot another. Nobody was wearing hunter orange. So that law came into effect. It made a dramatic difference. There's been a 300-foot mandatory setback from buildings before you can discharge firearms during hunting. There's been no driving deer law passed. There's been a landowner relations program created to address landowner concerns, and I think probably the last one that I want to speak of is the mandatory hunter safety class prior to purchasing a hunting license. So there have been some significant laws, and I know they've led to a serious reduction in hunting accidents. Now, one last, I think, worthy item to discuss is this amazing network of hunter safety classes and instructors that has been developed over the years that Inland Fisheries and Wildlife oversees, but is implemented through between 60 and 100 fish and game clubs across our state that teach hunter safety, that teach ethics, that are just committed to hunting safely. And I think that warranted, some recognition, because these people do it as volunteers on their own time and as basically a public service.
Let us ask a couple of clarification points that you are most qualified to share. When we received a letter from the uncle of Karen Rensel, he said that he was frustrated that many people didn't realize that it's required of a hunter to be able to identify the head and the torso of an animal before pulling a trigger. Can you lend some clarification to that?
Yeah. Some of the incidents where people were shot, their argument was that they believed that what they were looking at was a deer. They saw a flash of white. Well, that might have been an excuse that got you away, released without being charged in the 1950s and 60s and 70s. But in today's world, if you're shooting at a flash of white, then society is going to throw your butt in jail, and rightly so. You can't just be going through the woods and see brown or white and shoot at it. And I think that law was as much important because it reduced injuries, but it changed the culture. When you're out in the woods and you're hunting, you can no longer get away with using that as an excuse. If you're not always talking about an injury to a person. You can accidentally shoot cattle. You can accidentally shoot private property. There's this amazing responsibility that you have as a hunter when you go in the woods. You have a firearm, and when you pull the trigger, what comes out the end, you can't take it back. So the legislature said, you know what? As a hunter, you have an absolute responsibility to identify exactly what that is that you're shooting at. And that is where that definition came from. You need to know it's a deer before you fire. Not just a deer, but one of the most dangerous things you can do in the Maine woods as a hunter is turkey hunt. You're in camo, you have a decoy, and you are making a call that sounds like a turkey. So you should always be safe every type of hunting that you do and vigilant, not just deer hunting, but all types of hunting. Serious injuries occur, and as a hunter, you need to be vigilant, educated, and committed to doing it safely. And the other thing is respecting landowners. I always ask permission when I go hunting on somebody's land. I want them to know that I'm there, but I also seek out the landowner because I want to build a relationship with that landowner, a positive relationship. In some cases, become friends with landowners, treat them with respect, let them know that you're not just hunting there, but anytime they need you, you'll look out for them. So that relationship, Inland Fisheries and Wildlife, they have their four-day hunter safety class. We provide our space for free each year for 20 of those classes to occur at our facility. A major component of their four-day class is landowner relations, respect, ethics, and safety. And I think education, we must, because there's many groups trying to undermine that required safety class, it's a pain in the butt, so they want to try to minimize it or get rid of it. We can never let that program go away. It's too important.
Well, I appreciate you bringing us up to date on all the rules and regulations. My question's really directed to the point of hunting on private land, though. 94% of land in Maine is privately owned. If we had a law that said you must have landowners' permission, that would basically end hunting, wouldn't it?
It would. Because Maine is so diverse in its land ownership, like you said, 94% of Maine is privately owned. In the southern part of the state, many of those lots are tiny in comparison to northern Maine. We have a lot of out-of-state landowners. We have many large landowners that really are not individuals. They're corporations. They're boards of directors. They do not want to get 50 calls a year or 100 calls a year asking for written permission. And when you talk about permission, I think it's important to note that in order to enforce that law, it would have to be written permission. Now, that's where the complications begin. Getting the written permission of say, 6 or 8 landowners in southern Maine, it will be difficult, but at least you can likely reach them because they might actually be living in the community. But when you have to go into northern Maine where somebody owns 1,000 acres of land, there's no houses on the property, and you have to reach out to a corporation in, say, Canada to get permission, it's just not going to happen. So the logistics are very, very difficult. So there's that component. There's also the component around, you know, I was a logger for over 30 years. Finding the lines on properties, oftentimes landowners don't even agree on where their lines are, let alone being a hunter being able to identify where the lines are on a property. Even if you got written permission from a landowner, if they can't tell you where their lines are, how are you supposed to abide by the law? So there's a lot of logistics that are difficult, almost impossible. But I want to touch on something. In the article, Mr. Ripley, who, by the way, losing a daughter, I just can't even imagine what that's like for the family, for him. He got it right in that article. He made some terrific statements about what the law is, how it would be applied on the land, and his desire to make a change that would save lives. I have to tell you, all of us as hunters, we need to listen to what he said because it instills respect. He is spot on. What I think is missing is discussions between landowners, hunters, people who go on to private property. I was on a land trust board. Why they wanted me on the board was because I came from the hunting community and they wanted to understand us. I think what needs to happen is a full commitment to education, communication, and safety. And if we have those three elements, it makes a great foundation for making the woods safer for everybody.
David Trahan of the Sportsman's Alliance of Maine dialing in. Following up on our question of the day and an item in the weekend newspaper, should hunters be required to get permission from landowners? David, let me get myself in trouble with you by asking you a question playing the other side, and that is three deaths over three decades. How many more before we see some legislative action?
Well, again, I get back to Rick. The Inland Fisheries and Wildlife Committee, Judiciary, Criminal Justice, everyone is committed to safety, and there have been dramatic changes that have saved lives. Let's not lose track of the positive things that have happened there and reinforce them, because if you don't do that, if you keep saying, much like the gun control debate, that if we just pass one more law, everybody will be safe. No, they won't, because people make bad decisions. You can pass all the laws you want, but if you've got a slob in the woods who doesn't care what they're shooting at, then you've got a dangerous situation. We can never lose track of the individual responsibility. When you go in the woods as a hunter, and we pound it into their heads, when you go in the woods and you're carrying a dangerous weapon, you have to be responsible for that weapon. And that's the piece where I'm hoping we don't rely on the idea of passing new laws, because, you know, that law may be effective when you're taking a person to court, but I want it to have an impact before the incident occurs.
You were in the legislature. You know how the whole system works. When we went back into the late 80s, when Karen Wood was killed, there was a movement then, and something did happen, that you had to identify the torso and head of the target. But the committee wanted to pass a law, and it rejected it, an act to ensure safe hunting, which would have required written permission or some kind of notice that you had permission to hunt on the land. That failed, and would any other attempts, I think, have failed since that time, right?
Yeah, they have. But what landowners, I think probably many landowners, don't understand that inland fisheries and wildlife right now, when they direct and teach hunters to seek permission, they also provide a booklet. It basically looks like a receipt pad. A landowner can post their land hunting with permission only. At that point, the hunter must seek permission from the landowner. Some landowners, I know because I hand these out, our staff hands them out when we're at shows and whatnot, and on that form, it has the landowner, the lot, the town, and contact information. So when the hunter comes to the landowner's door and asks permission, the landowner says, not only am I going to give you permission, but you're going to have to fill out this piece of paper on who you are, okay? So at that point, when wardens go on to the land, they can say to, you know, if there's a complaint, do you have written permission to be here? That process already exists, and it is used by many landowners across the state as a way of keeping track of who's on their property. We don't need a law. All we need is for landowners to understand they already have the laws and the rights and the process in place to do this if that's what they choose to do.
David, we've got to scoot, but before we go, could you share with us a website where people that have questions that the Sportsman's Alliance of Maine may have already answered, where they can go online and read these answers?
Sure. You could actually call our organization or call Inland Fisheries and Wildlife. Their main number is 287-8000. 287-8000. They can direct you to the Landowner Relations Program and give you answers to all these questions. In addition, if people want to reach out to the Sportsman's Alliance of Maine, they can reach out to me. Our number is 623-4589. We'll direct you to whatever agency can answer your questions.
GHRT Rewinds, brought to you by your hometown real estate team, Laughlin and Wolfington Realty. Thinking about selling your home? Call 629-9211 and start packing.